I'm Dava Sobel, and this is Stargazing on the BBC World Service. It's the last program in our series. We've been to Poland in the time of Copernicus, to the futuristic observatories of ALMA in Chile, Mauna Kea in Hawaii, and sites where new spacefaring telescopes are being built. Every place we've gone, we've found people dazzled by the night sky, yearning to bring it closer.
Especially in the Karoo, at night in summer, the stars is so bright.
There's the Southern Cross. Do you see two bright stars? That's south.
I can stand on my porch and stargaze all night and see the most beautiful stars, and it's just amazing.
In the small community of Carnarvon, on the arid plateau known as the Great Karoo in South Africa, the night sky is a ready source of entertainment. The semi-desert conditions here, low rainfall, dry air, extremes of heat and cold, make this a difficult place to live.
There's not a lot of people living here. What you'll see around us is a lot of sheep as we're driving through.
And it's the small number of inhabitants that makes this an ideal site for one of the largest radio telescopes ever built.
When you have people, you have radio frequency interference because people have cell phones, they have smartwatches, they want to have Wi-Fi.
Currently under construction, the SKA, the Square Kilometer Array, will comprise a couple of thousand radio antennas studying the region's red earth in a pinwheel formation. Viewed from above, the array will resemble the spiral arms of a galaxy.
A spiral of dishes going up through the African continent from the Karoo through to Namibia, Botswana, Mozambique, Zambia, Kenya, Ghana, and then even Madagascar and Mauritius.
We are building the world's largest radio telescope. We are going to search for pulsars.
The location of the SKA site.
South African President Jacob Zuma visited the SKA along with several other heads of state, scientists, engineers, and journalists from around the world.
The SKA project presents an opportunity to intensively recruit and train young South Africans to pursue careers in the field of science and technology.
It is an engineering challenge to build an instrument of this scale somewhere as remote as this.
Our guide to this out-of-the-way place, midway between Cape Town and Botswana, is Anton Binneman, stakeholder manager for SKA South Africa.
Most of the telescopes will be within this area that we're in now. So the total area is about 130,000 odd hectares.
The SKA is just about the biggest astronomy endeavor in the future years. It's going to be the biggest telescope ever built and probably the biggest ever to be built because you're talking about a continent-sized telescope here.
Kevin Govender is director of the Office of Astronomy for Development.
What this represents is really pushing our limits of technology, pushing our limits of what we can observe from this planet, of the rest of the universe. Because we're doing it from the African continent is a huge statement for where Africa sees itself going.
At that time, South Africa had just emerged from apartheid and relatively limited contact with the outside world from an intellectual perspective, from a trade perspective.
Rob Adam is managing director of SKA here. In the early 90s, when the idea was born, he served as Director General of Science for the country.
Those of us that were in government in those early days, the Mandela government, we had the task to try to re-engage with the rest of the world. And I was in the science department. And the question we asked was, well, if we were outside South Africa, particularly in a scientifically rich country, if you tolerate the term, what would you want in South Africa? What would cause you to invest there and develop scientific infrastructure? And I had just been in Chile myself, and I saw what they had done, and I saw what Australia had done. What they'd done effectively was turn emptiness, in other words, the lack of human habitation, the lack of human interference, the lack of radio frequency interference, the lack of light pollution. They turned that into an investment proposition.
Africans have their own stargazing traditions dating from ancient times. Thebe Medupe, an astrophysicist and researcher in ethnoastronomy, has been studying manuscripts held in the library of Timbuktu.
We studied about 40 of these ancient manuscripts, and we found some interesting things. One of the things we found was that people were being taught models of the solar systems at school, at these Islamic schools, by West African scholars. These were clearly ancient Greek ideas that found its way into West Africa, into the desert. They used astronomy for determining longitude and latitude of a town. The latitude of a place like Timbuktu was determined by measuring the altitude of the pole star, Polaris, above the horizon. And the longitude, for example, was determined by somebody in Timbuktu and somebody in a place like Mecca timing as a lunar eclipse. And the difference in the times between the two places gives you the difference in the longitude. It's very powerful, and it should really be an uplifting kind of information, and it should be used to encourage our learners and young people to know that our people from very long time ago were very much fascinated about the natural environment, and why should you not do it today as well?
The San were the first Karoo inhabitants to appreciate the big night skies. Today, they are mostly dispersed, but Chief Mario, chairman of the San Council in Platfontein, still remembers what he learned from the stars.
We learned there is a particular star that rises in the east in the morning before dawn at a certain time of the year. We knew that when this star rose, the Junjun would come. The stars were used to teach children about the Duya Duya. Each constellation meant something on its own, and also something as a whole. People around fires talk about the stars. We believe that if the star you are born under shines brightly, you can be happy.
Youngsters such as Jaden Sundelquick, a student at the high school in Carnarvon, can combine these traditions with the new power of the SKA.
The SKA actually woke that in me, because when I was grade 5, when I was 11, we had workshops, so people were educating us about stars and nebulas and what's out there and what astronomy offers. And ever since then, it's become sort of a passion to stargaze, because there are so much things out there that you see but that you don't really know what it is, and it's just beautiful. And I think that's what astronomy is. It's kind of to explain for us what we see, you know, because we see the most beautiful things and we can talk about these things, but we don't know what they are.
This is stargazing on the BBC World Service.
You can see how big these things are. It's 16, 17 meters across. It's tons and tons of metal. There's a lot of guys working simultaneously. It's a massive, massive structure.
It's not a single radio collector. It's an array of smaller collectors. It's the sum of all those dishes that's the important thing. I'm Anna Scaife. I'm Professor of Radio Astronomy at the University of Manchester. You can't build a dish that's hundreds of kilometres across. It's just not physically possible. I mean, you get to a point where the structural stability of a dish just is impossible to maintain. And so this technique of using arrays of dishes and combining the signals from those dishes allows us to synthesise the equivalent of a giant single telescope.
The largest single-dish radio telescope in the world is the new FAST telescope in China. With an aperture the width of 30 soccer fields, nestled in a natural depression among the mountains of Guizhou province, The completed SKA will have an effective diameter as large as the distance spanned by its many dishes, across continents and the ocean between them.
The initial phase of the SKA, phase one, is intended to have 197 dishes, and those will be located within South Africa. Phase two of the dish array will have, at the moment, it's proposed 3,000 dishes, and those will be spread all across Southern Africa and across the Mozambique Channel to Madagascar and Mauritius, which gives it huge baselines of thousands of kilometres.
The first time I came here, it was just after the first 16 was built. Obviously, there's now 40 telescopes as we're passing through now. So for me, it's extremely exciting.
The HESS, Namibia's High Energy Stereoscopic System, was the first major internationally run telescope established on the African continent. It detects cosmic sources of the very shortest wavelengths of light, known as gamma rays. Next up was SALT, the South African Large Telescope, collecting visible light. And now, the SKA will study the longest wavelengths of light in the radio range of the electromagnetic spectrum.
And so effectively that was the strategy, dual three and dual three maximally, to cover the whole electromagnetic spectrum accessible to astronomy from the ground. The radio spectrum is a very broad spectrum. It extends from rather low frequencies, radio waves of several meters long, down to relatively short wavelengths of around about a millimeter. And originally there were several sites that were potentially viable. One was China, Argentina, Chile, another was Australia, and another was Africa, centered on South Africa. And then a short list of just Australia and South Africa was drawn up. And both countries bid for the entire telescope initially. And in the end, the committee made a decision to split the site. And Australia has now the low frequency project, and South Africa and Africa have the mid and high frequency parts.
What is the ultimate goal of this vast array?
To map the universe in gravitational waves. And gravitational waves are incredibly exciting. They're showing us the universe in a new way, in the same way that radio telescopes themselves revolutionized our understanding of physical processes in the universe. Gravitational waves have the potential to do the same again.
Anna Scaife is working at the SKA organizational headquarters, located at the Jodrell Bank Observatory in Britain. It's one of the world's oldest radio observatories and a global hub for radio astronomy.
The SKA intends to map gravitational waves as they pass through different regions of our galaxy. And the way it's going to do that is to use a network of highly accurate clocks. And these clocks are essentially dead stars. They're an astrophysical object called a pulsar. They're very, very dense, and they spin very rapidly. And as they spin, they emit beams of radio radiation from their poles. And those beams of radiation will periodically pass through the telescope's beam. So they're like little cosmic lighthouses blinking all over the galaxy. And it's the precision of the timing from these pulsars that we can use to detect gravitational waves. Because as a gravitational wave passes over a network of pulsars, it will stretch and compress the space between them and subtly alter the timing of those pulses.
The audacious observing plan requires absolute radio silence, as Amanda Weltman, a theoretical physicist at the University of Cape Town, explains.
We have an Act of Parliament called the Astronomy Advantages Act, which protects a large part of the Karoo from any radio frequency interference. South Africa is phenomenally well suited to astronomy because we have both the situation where our population is not dense everywhere in the country, there are parts of the country with very low density and so very low light pollution, and because the government have thought in advance about this and placed this Act of Parliament that have protected a part of the country for astronomy.
Most of the farms is to provide radio frequency protection, a buffer zone basically to protect the instrument from from radio frequency interference.
Astronomers praise these precautions, but locals in Carnarvon see the acquisition and control of the land from a different perspective.
My name is Colleen Clutter. I was born and raised here in the Karoo, in Carnarvon, and I'm farming. SKA need more land. It's about 140,000 hectares that they still need. Now, they go to the farmers, they say, we want your land. You can either sell it to us or you have to go. And none of the farmers want to sell their farms because it's their living, it's their lifestyle. And the moment they sell the farm, where do they go? Where do the people go that's working on the farm?
Some of the anti-propaganda sometimes surprises you.
Anton Binneman.
If you walk into town and they say 600 Chinese people are coming and it's going to destroy our economy, and the lies spread by the anti-group sometimes surprises you. But in terms of emotion and emotion about land and our future and the fear of the unknown, it's not something that comes as a complete surprise.
Louise Buzak has lived in Carnarvon for many years and has long experience with land controls.
I was only 24 years old in 1956. We were one of the first towns that was told we must get out of town because the area that we live in was declared white, like Cape Town. For 60 years, I've been fighting against people that wants to put people off their land, that wants to get rid of people, that doesn't respect other people's property. And this town has got a history of people standing together. I actually thought this will be wonderful. It's development coming. But now we don't know what's going to happen because we didn't think they're going to take land away from people. And that's a wake-up call to us.
Those concerns notwithstanding, construction of the telescope continues apace.
As you see, the construction is underway, and then on the left side you'll see the optic fiber link that links the SKA instrument back to the big optic fiber that goes down to Cape Town. It's probably one of the fastest optic fibers in the world at this stage because of all the data it needs to carry.
If you're using all of the dishes together, then you have to combine the data from all of those dishes. And we combine it into a facility called the Central Signal Processing Facility. And that's a huge amount of data. For SKA 1 MID, it's just over 150 terabytes per second.
When I saw the dishes moving, I just got excited about a career in astronomy. I mean, just the size of the dishes and the number of dishes at that time, I just couldn't believe it.
Isabella Ramala is a junior commissioning scientist trained by and for the SKA. Now she holds a place in the control room in Cape Town on the hunt for radio interference.
I am looking at the interference from the cell phones, because the cell phones, the GPS, TVs, radio, we are all working with radio waves, and those are man-made radio waves. What we are looking for as astronomers, we're looking for radio waves that are coming from stars and galaxies and the stars in between, and the guests in between. So what I do is try to see how much of that interference are we exposed to. For example, if I know there is a flight going into sight, I have to switch off the telescope because the interference coming from the plane is also very strong. And we are amplifying the weak signals from the stars. So that means we will be amplifying signals from the plane. That will definitely fry the telescope.
Isabella is a professional astronomer, but the SKA will likely welcome willing amateurs as well, because astronomy faces an ever-growing problem. How to interpret all those terabytes of data? Chris Lintott is professor of astrophysics at the University of Oxford.
The fundamental problem is this, that we've got very good at collecting information about the universe. And these days, modern astronomers are likely to be getting their information in the form of big surveys. And so I worked with one during my PhD, for example, called the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, which took images, good images, of a million galaxies in the local universe. And one of the things you want to do if you've got images of a million galaxies is look at them and provide labels, categorize them by shape. The shape of a galaxy tells you how it's changed over time, how it's interacted with its surroundings. And so we tried getting a student to do this. The student's name was Kevin Schwinsky, and he looked at 50,000 galaxies and decided that he'd had enough, but also proved he was better than a computer at doing this. And so in slight desperation, we asked the public for help, and hundreds of thousands of people decided that they wanted to spend a few minutes of their day classifying galaxies. And collectively, their results were better than Kevin's. And so suddenly we had an army of what we'd now call citizen scientists, volunteers.
As a result of this experience, Chris founded Zooniverse, an online data fest where anyone can lend a hand. I enjoyed my own stint volunteering in the galaxy identification effort.
What do you think inspires a person? How would someone not interested in the field learn about Zooniverse?
We've shown that people who come into Zooniverse don't come in already interested in science. They sort of stumble across it. And then the process of being involved breaks down the barriers that people normally have to talking about science. So this isn't meant to sound as a threat, but people who had never thought they'd be interested in the details of galaxy spectra or how planet transits work and how planet discovery works or what it means to look at the Milky Way in the infrared instead of the optical find themselves discussing these very topics with their citizen colleagues and with professional astronomers because they've got a reason to care.
The community in Carnarvon has an above average reason to care, and will have the chance to participate directly in the work of the SKA. Sizwe Seranyane, maintenance manager for the SKA, is counting on their help.
The challenge is really to get competent people to do the work. People who are skilled do not like to come to the dry areas of the Karoo. They prefer to be in cities. So we've worked on a strategy to get the local people who are comfortable with being here, born here, to train them up and get them to a level that they could be able and to look after the instruments and be competent enough to handle the complex instruments that are on site.
The CyberNet was donated by the SKA.
Hendrik Robin is principal of Carnarvon High School.
So we are currently in the CyberLab. We've got 42 computers in here. There's an optic fiber line that was also provided by the SKA, which means that this CyberLab got one of the fastest internet lines. They talk about 10 gigabytes per second, but unfortunately, as you will see, the computers that was given to us was in 2009, but they're still functioning.
But there's no question that the SKA is an overall boon to the high school.
The SKA help us with getting good maths and science teachers. We've had a young teacher here, Mr. Itumuleng Mulefe, and he's done brilliant work within the school for the last 4 or 5 years now. Then they provided learners with bursaries, and those learners are top achievers within maths and science.
I know they're planning to explore the universe as it is not explored at the moment, and they have linked up with Australia, and it will be the biggest science project in the world.
Student Graham Saval sees a proud future with the SKA, and so does Jaden Sundelquick.
It's not just groundbreaking science, it's also groundbreaking, so to speak, for our town, because we're getting exposure. People are talking about our town, saying that this is where the SKA is, what can we do there, can we develop the people, can we develop the community? And yeah, I'm very excited. The SKA has become part of my life.
Here's Kevin Govender.
I've just come back from a meeting in Ethiopia, the International Astronomical Union, and there's great excitement about what this project is going to bring to Africa in terms of the skills development, that if they should choose careers relating to science and technology, that there are opportunities on this continent that are just about amongst the best in the world.
We want a scientifically literate society, and really, it seems to me that astronomy is a very appealing subject to ordinary people.
Sebe Medupe.
At a very basic level, astronomy attempts to answer questions that most people ask themselves in their lives. You know, where do we come from? What will happen to us in the future? Are there aliens out there? And so we can use that curiosity, which astronomy appeals to, And the fact that the SKA project is a very high-tech, top-level engineering kind of project.
I was teaching in Senegal in one of the advanced centers for mathematics. It's an institute that is called AIM, in which African students can study advanced mathematics.
Francesca Bidotto is a theoretical physicist.
One of my students had as a dream to go to work for SKA. So I think this is fantastic. There is a generation of African students who have the possibility to think of themselves working in astronomy, in advanced science in Africa.
At the end of this stargazing journey, I return to where we started, wondering what would have happened 500 years ago if the Polish astronomer Nicholas Copernicus had walked out the gate of his cathedral complex and recruited assistance from the families of the townspeople, the local farmers, the merchants, the Baltic fishermen. What if he had capitalized on the easy appeal of the beauty of the night sky to educate the youth of Fromborg in astronomy? Over the 30 years he worked to perfect his theory, he might have been able to cultivate a receptive audience for his bold new view of the planetary order. I'm Deva Sobel, and this has been Stargazing, a Cast Iron Radio production in collaboration with the Royal Observatory Greenwich for the BBC World Service.